Hi. Today we are going to cover cost management in global procurement. The learning objective here is to understand the total cost of ownership, the concept as it is applicable to procurement, understand implications of the logistics cost, understand the role of taxation, incentives, and other credits in global sourcing, understand how global sourcing manager should implement practices for effective tax incentive and credit management. Structure will be, we will cover first the total cost of ownership, then we'll cover the impact of logistics cost, role of taxation costs, implementation aspects for global sourcing manager, for effective tax and incentive management. Also, we will cover what are the best practices for effective tax and incentive management and impact of global tariff and protective policies adopted by United States and China. So, what is total cost of ownership? Cost of ownership, you know, for a normal material, any item that you buy, maybe just the price at which you buy the product, the price you pay for the product. But in industry, when we talk of cost of ownership, we have taken the example here of a computer system which consists of a hardware and maybe a program, you know, a software, etc. So let's look at what it entails. What are the investments that one has to make in this case? So you have the network hardware and software cost. You have the server hardware and software cost, workstations hardware. So you have to first set up the entire network, the server, the workstations where the people will actually interface with the machine, the installation and integration of the hardware, because you, for installation you require labor, you require efforts, you require qualified people, purchasing research cost, because which system to go for, the purchasing research also is resulting in certain cost, warranties and licenses associated with the equipment, license tracking, migration expense. If you have a legacy system, then you need to migrate to the new system. So there is going to be a cost to it. This could be a cost which either you are using a third party or you're using the same vendor or supplier who is supplying the new system. Risk management cost associated with susceptibility to vulnerabilities, availability of upgrades, patches, because you know you need to enter into an agreement with the supplier that for what period of time they will support upgrades, patches, after which the support will stop. So the longer the support you require, the more is the cost you will have to pay for it. And some of this cost may be paid upfront, some may be paid as you go along. So you know, you may be required to pay as you desire to upgrade the versions that you have. Future licensing policies related to the equipment, infrastructure, what is the space required, the kind of conditions which are required to be maintained in certain IT systems, you need to maintain certain temperatures, you require uninterrupted power, testing cost of the equipment, downtime, outage, failure expenses, diminished performance. Just to give an example, I will not read through the entire list, you can actually look through the example, but there are related costs. So, you know, the cost of ownership is not just the price you pay for the equipment. It's the price or the cost you incur for establishing the entire system. So, broadly speaking, what are the key components of the total cost of ownership? One is the purchase price, what you pay to the vendor. Also, do you have any tax benefit? Like, for example, if your equipment, you have a tax benefit on the depreciation, that will actually bring down your cost. In case of even GST, you are getting a GST credit. So many a times, you know, in manufacturing, if you are using a material, then the GST on that material is not considered as a cost. Please remember that GST is a value-added tax. So, as long as you are adding value and passing the material on, the tax is actually not a cost to you. It is a cost to the end user. So, like for example, you buy a pair of shoes and there is a GST on that pair of shoes. You are going to not be able to take benefit of that GST. You are not, as a consumer, you will not be able to take credit of the GST. So for you, it's a cost. But any business which is actually adding value to that material and then selling it at a price, they are not going to feel the impact of GST, because they will get the GST credit on the value addition. When at the time of sale, they will have to pay the tax again. So from the kitty, the credit that they have taken, they can pay the tax, and whatever tax is paid, they will recover it from the customer. Then of course you have the insurance cost, fuel cost. Fuel cost as in case of, you know, if you have to bring a material by road or so, then the fuel cost is incurred. Financing cost, if you are seeking external finance, if you're borrowing money, if you're going to pay for your equipment in installment, then there will be a financing cost. If you're going to self-finance, maybe you can eliminate this cost. Repair cost. Now, repair cost can be either you need to get the equipment repaired as and when there is an outage, or you will have to enter into an annual maintenance contract, you know, to maintain the equipment, whether it is malfunctioning or even otherwise. Fees and taxes applicable to the transportation equipment. Cost of maintenance. The annual maintenance cost we already covered. Opportunity cost. That means if you had taken some other option, you would have had some other opportunity. So when you are selecting one particular option, maybe you're foregoing some other opportunity. So that opportunity cost is there. Downtime cost associated with the transportation of the equipment. So even while you are migrating from one system to other, there will be, you know, certain downtime. Or when you're acquiring a new system, there'll be, you are paying for the equipment, but by the time you utilize, there'll be some downtime. So what are the logistics cost types? So one is the transportation, which is simple, which is the movement of the material from the supplier or the vendor to your premises. Inventory holding. Now, when you talk of the B2B business, you know, the inventory holding will be, you are required to keep the material. You tend to bring the material beforehand for the inspection purpose. Sometimes, as a safety, you bring the material a couple of days early, especially if it is a global procurement, you know, because in global procurement, there can be delays in the arrival of the material because of ocean conditions, port congestion, etc. So you have to store the material. Administrative expenses, we will see what are those expenses. Custom charges, which is basically your custom duties as well as your clearing forwarding charges. Any risk or damage which may occur, which may be covered by insurance, may not be covered by insurance. Handling and packaging. Handling also, because if you're bringing material, you know, importing the material, you may disturb the container at the port, and then, you know, you handle the material, bring it in, you know, trucks or so. The other option is if you're bringing material in containers or in ISO tanks, then you can actually take it to your factory premises or your production site, and you can, you know, unload the material there. So coming to the transportation cost, so we talked about the freight charge, the consolidation cost, you know, so sometimes you are also consolidating a number of material and then bringing it. And the consolidation also can cost you. Transfer fee, pickup and delivery. So transfer fees are, you know, the fees that you are paying to the clearing forwarding agents, etc. Pickup and delivery, as we said, we have number of options. Either you bring the material right up to your doorsteps, unload it there, or you have to pick it up from the vendor premises, depending upon the Incoterms that you have agreed upon. Even for imported materials, you may decide to destuff the material at the port and bring it, you know, through your transporter or your nominated carrier to your premises. Inventory holding, we were talking of the pipeline holding, let us say that you have a pipeline between the unloading point, especially for petroleum products, and the pipeline, let's say, is a length of 5 kilometers. Now, the pipeline is going to always hold some inventory. You can never drain the pipeline. So, you will always have a pipeline inventory. The only time it will get emptied is when you have to repair or do something, when you are required to totally drain it. Safety stock. You are always maintaining safety stock, which will cover your demand variation that you have, as well as the lead times that you need to react to any changes. So higher the lead time, you require higher safety stock. Higher the demand fluctuation, you will require a higher safety stock. So safety stock is another inventory holding cost that you have. Administration, so order processing. You have a procurement department, and the order processing has a definite cost to it, because the cost of the procurement department and the number of orders that you handle will decide what is your order processing cost, what is your cost for processing each order, depending upon the volumes that you handle, or either the function as a whole handles or the executive concerned or the manager concerned is handling. Communication expenses, overheads. So even if you are using the ERP systems, you are using a specialized ERP module for procurement, etc., all this will also come under the communication and the overhead expenses, because today you have systems which communicate with your the sellers. The moment you have a requirement, you issue a purchase order, the copy automatically goes to the seller. Integration of the systems, etc. So that is what will come under the overheads. Coming to the customs and the clearance, so you have the custom clearance expenses, the brokerage fee, and the allocation fee. So within customs, of course, the duty part is there. Currently, we have about 7.5% duty for most of the industrial items, plus 10% cess comes to about 8.25%. Brokerage fee, there could be even the clearing forwarding charges when you have a CHA, a custom house agent, who does the clearing activities for you. Damage to the cargo. So you may have certain damage, loss, delay. You have the insurance. Many a times, corporations, multinational companies, they have insurance policies which cover the losses. But there is a threshold limit, which means that they will not entertain losses below, let's say, $1,000. So if you have a minor damage, you find that you are bringing some chemicals or some liquids, and you find one or two containers which are, say, about 50, 60 kg each, there is a leakage, there is a loss, there is a damage, then these damages may not be covered by insurance. You will only be able to claim the insurance when the damages are more than a certain limit. Also, if the most insurances for imported cargoes, they are covered up to the port. So let us say your Incoterms are CIF, where cost, insurance, and freight are covered. So the insurance is covered up to the destination port. Let us say that there are damages which occur between the port and your premises. So then these losses will not be covered under insurance, unless you have specific insurance policy to cover the transfer of material from the port to the premises. Terminal handling charges, these are more related to the port. Material handling cost, because even sometimes you have to engage a forklift truck, etc., for loading the material onto a trailer or a truck if it's a full container load. So all these costs will add up to the handling and the packaging costs. So terminal handling, material handling, in-out handling, which again is the costs. There are various costs you incur while importing the material at the port. Disposal charge, so in case there are any losses, etc., if any spillage, there will be certain charges payable for disposal of or handling of the spillage or wastage. packaging, supplies of material, storage, at the port, if you don't clear the material within a certain time, then they will charge you detention, demurrage. So all these would come under the handling and the packaging costs. What are the impact of changes in tax regulations? So where the supply chain and sourcing activities are carried out, right? You are carrying out, let's say, a global procurement, then these are going to be applicable to you at in the country, the seller country, as well as the country into which you are importing the material. The cost of finished products and delivery routes and timing. So apart from the cost of the goods, the delivery route, now whether you are bringing the material by sea, by road, by air, if you look at within Europe, you have both the options. Certain places you can ship the material by sea, or within Europe also material can move by road. So your cost will vary depending upon which is the option you choose. Grants and incentives like export benefits, tax rebates, etc. So as you know that in many countries, including India, we have a lot of incentives for exports, which is basically to encourage the exports. You also have certain schemes where you can bring in the raw materials from other countries without payment of duty when it is to be used for export. Or you may have SEZs or so, where you are operating as if you are located outside India. You don't pay the taxes, etc., unless you bring the material into domestic area. Cost and risk of doing business internationally. So there are certain costs and risks when you do international business, when you are doing global procurement. So those are the impacts that you have on the tax regulations. So indirect tax challenges for procurement manager. Procurement of services from many countries. Now, even in India, if you are procuring any services from any other country, then you have to pay TDS. That means you have to deduct TDS. So if I am the person who is availing the services from an overseas company, and I have availed the service, I have to pay the seller or the service provider, then I have to deduct TDS. And likewise, in other countries also, similar kind of rules apply. So, if you're procuring from other countries, the services, etc., then the indirect tax challenges have to be faced. And it's a little complicated because there are taxation rules which are, to avoid the double taxation in different countries. And for that purpose, many a times, if you want to avoid this kind of taxes, you have to furnish documents, certificates to say that you do not have a permanent establishment in the country in which the services have been delivered. So this is one part of it. Selling in, from, and to many countries. So again, the taxation regime of different countries will vary, the implications will vary. Like we said, depending on whether you are bringing in material by paying a normal custom duty, or you're bringing it under a scheme which allows you duty-free import with a promise to re-export the material. So these will also decide the treatment which is to be given. Ownership of goods in many countries. So it could be that you have entities in different countries. So when we talk of multinationals, they have entities in every country which is registered in the local country. And the ownership of the goods is actually changing hands. And the taxation can change depending upon the taxation rules prevalent in that country. Transacting in goods on consignment basis. Now, if you are holding inventory at the customer premises, and the customer pays for it as and when he uses the material, what we call as a consignment stock. So here, your stocks are held within the customer premises, and customer will draw the material as and when he requires, and the sale is considered to be done when he is drawing the material out of that store, your store. So the tax implications here will apply depending again on the local laws. Movement of goods across the borders for storage. So one is movement of goods for manufacturing activity, etc. Here it may be just for storage purpose. We do this. We have a warehouse in Singapore where we bring in material from the region for sale to various customers within the region. So you don't need to actually ship material, different material from different countries or different locations. So we actually consolidate it at Singapore. So there we bring the material, we store it as in case of a bonded warehouse. We don't pay the taxes, we don't pay the duties. There is a cost, of course, for the storage, etc. And from there, the material can be resold, re-exported to other countries. Storage of goods as at multiple geographies. You can also have the different locations where you are storing the material with a certain strategic intent. So, in global supply chain, you find that the lead times are very high and the response times are also longer. So many a times you may hold certain inventories at locations from where you can cater to 2-3 countries. So you don't directly deliver it to a particular country, but you keep it at a central point, mainly for storage purpose, from where it can be re-exported without much hassles. This kind of hubs are more popular with countries like Singapore, Dubai, and even Hong Kong. Hong Kong, of course, is now not so popular, but where you keep the goods mainly, for re-export. movement of goods across various geographies for process and repair. So one we saw was, for storage purpose, so that it can be resold from there. The other could be, for processing and for repair purpose. So many a times you don't want to bring the material, to the supplying country, but you would like to take it to another country where it can be processed, can be repaired, where you have the facilities. Again, various taxation regimes may apply depending upon the understanding between the nations, etc. Provision of services is in many countries. We already talked about services, and services is in many countries attract this tax deduction at source, TDS as we call it. Ownership of raw material, semi-finished products and finished products throughout the global supply chain. So with a very complex supply chain like I described in my organization, where you have a setup which is across say about 27 to 29 countries and manufacturing at 15-16 sites. So you will have raw material, intermediates, finished products lying across, and you have to strategically decide how the ownership will change depending upon the taxation laws and the local regulations. Maintaining title of the ownership of the goods till the last leg of the supply chain. Last leg is till the ownership is transferred to a third party. So till such time, the title of the ownership has to be maintained. Till such time, the material may be moving from one affiliate to another, which is, it may be the same company, but having entities or affiliates in different countries, that you could be partly processing the material, sending it to another material, etc. Taxes applicable to goods while crossing border. So import and export licensing. So you have the import duty, export duty. We talked about like export duty is applicable in case of China. A few other countries also have export duty on specific products. So these are the duties which have to be paid. Value-added tax and goods and service tax reporting and documentation. So we know that even when you import the goods in India, you not only pay the custom duty, you have to pay a surcharge, and it's a social welfare surcharge, which is 10% of the basic custom duty. Over and above that, you have to pay the IGST or the interstate GST, which is applicable. Thankfully, this is not a cost if you are a manufacturer or a business, because you will get credit of that. But you don't get a credit of the custom duty unless you are going to add value to the material and re-export it. So customs and excise duty reporting and compliance documentation. So even some of the customs reports and the documents are supposed to be retained for 10 years. So you have a cost, firstly, to make the documents. You require sometimes special software for creating the documents, the compliance, tracking of your licenses and certificates. And you have to then store the documents, the physical documents, for at least 10 years, because during any assessment or audit, you may be required by the Revenue Department to present these documents. Excise duties on importation, countervailing duties. Today, we don't have excise duty on most of the products, but yes, there are few products like petroleum products and alcohol where we still don't have the GST, we still operate with excise duty. And import and export compliance obligation. So if you are, you have an advanced license where you are bringing the raw material and you are adding value and then re-exporting the material. So there, a lot of compliance has to be maintained. You have a passbook scheme where for making a product, you have to, what are the raw material or inputs that go into it, in what proportion. So when you import the raw material duty-free, then you have to actually prove to the authorities, to the DGFT, that you have exported equivalent volume of the finished product. If not, you will have to pay certain penalties. So let us say you imported the raw material, but you could not export material which is manufactured out of it. You will be required to pay the duty which was exempted at the time of import. You will be paying interest on it, and then you will also be required to pay certain penalties. So these compliances and obligations also have to be taken care. So what are the factors important to evaluate the impact of taxation on procurement? So shift in the trade pattern across the globe. You need to constantly know what are the changes happening in the taxation regime in various countries. Today, you may be importing it from a certain country because you had a tax advantage. Maybe with the changes in policy in that country or in your own country, the things may change. We have seen this happen recently with palm oil. We have also seen that, you know, there has been a change in tax regime with respect to certain materials coming from China or some other countries. Even the exporting country, that means if your supplier is in a country, they are exporting a material, that is, the country is very rich in this particular material. The governments or the government agencies normally will formulate policies which will encourage people to take value-added products or export value-added products rather than exporting the raw materials. So that means they do not want, that you take the material in raw form, but rather a semi-processed or a processed form with the value addition, because the exporting country gains when a value-added product is being exported in terms of the revenue. So this kind of a shift has to be kept in mind, and your policies would also require to change whenever there is any shift in the trade patterns. Ever-changing and transforming supply chains. So any local conflict, any political changes in the country. So the supply chain you know, or the supply chain, you will have to make some changes. It could be also the way you're doing business, or the supply chain mechanism may change, which may change the equation and which may make a supplier maybe not that viable, in which case you will have to reconsider your decisions. Shift in the taxation regime across the globe. Now, if there is a shift in the taxation regime which is applicable across the globe, naturally you will have to re-look at your decisions. You may even have to see whether it makes sense to globally procure the material, or whether you can get it locally, which one is better. Trade agreements, bans, actions against dumping of the product. So you have free trade agreements and bilateral trade agreements between countries. In Asia, we have this kind of an agreement with number of countries where either you can bring in products with a concessional duty. So like, for example, if you look at Indonesia, which is one of the hubs which supplies a lot of monomers and also the monomer-based products. If you bring it from Indonesia, you know, the normal duty would be 7.5%, but if you bring it from Indonesia, then this monomer-based products will come to you at about 5% duty. There are also certain products which come to you without duty. That means there will be no duty applicable if you bring it from a particular country. But this has to be then part of a trade agreement, either a free trade agreement or a bilateral trade agreement. And these details generally will be available with the people who are tracking this. Bans. We have seen that since 2018, there has been a ban on imports from Pakistan. There is an indirect ban by saying that you have to pay 200% duty on any imports coming in from Pakistan. So this is another kind of a taxation implication which one needs to be aware of. So indirectly, basically the government is giving a message that you are not supposed to bring in material from a certain country. Anti-dumping duties. There are countries which are known to subsidize the products below their cost so that they interfere in your local manufacturing or local producers. In such a case, the government also imposes an anti-dumping duty. That means if you are bringing the material from a particular country, then there will be an anti-dumping duty applicable. And many a times, this kind of a anti-dumping duty is on a specific product and a specific country. So the same product, if bought from another country, you may not have to pay anti-dumping duty on it. But these are some of the benefits, as well as the demotivation that the government actually builds in for global procurement. Tax and other incentive of the business. So that we will see, you know, what are the tax and other incentive of the businesses. Thank you.